Hello, and welcome to this episode of The Financial Translator, where we discuss financial topics in layman's terms to move you from confusion to confidence on a given topic. I am your host, Kirk Krekemeyer, the Principal Advisor at Pebble Valley Wealth Management. We are a fee-only financial advisory firm helping our clients make informed decisions on their road toward financial security. You can find more information at pvwealthmgt.com. On today's show, I'm going to discuss taxes. I'm going to focus on looking at the first couple pages of your tax return, 1040, Form 1040, and identify a couple of key items that you can look at and pick up some valuable information. You don't need to be a tax expert. We're just going to focus on the base understanding for you. There's often much value that you can pick up by understanding your taxes and how they work and which items that you can control, more importantly. The approach I'm going to take here is I'm going to reference some of the key lines on your Form 1040. Again, it's just the two-page summary at the beginning. And then I will go through and explain first what's behind the number or that value on the return, and then a couple of brief planning strategies within each one. Note that I'm not an accountant, and the strategies that I do describe are not going to be all-inclusive, but it will give you, highlight some of the key topics to consider as you're planning this year. Again, the idea is to proactively plan now to help control your tax return coming next spring. You can also reference my blog post on this topic, where you'll find an image of this Form 1040 that I'm going to talk about, as well as some useful tax bracket tables for both ordinary income and capital gains. As a brief legal disclaimer, my discussions here should not be construed as financial or investment advice, or specifically today, not as accounting advice, and each person's situation is unique. All right, let's go. So before I jump into the key lines on your Form 1040, I do want to first distinguish two main types of income. You can also reference a past podcast on this, episode number 3 talks about this, or a previous blog post back in February of 2022 that you'll find on my website. But the two main types of income are ordinary income and capital gains. Ordinary income, typically that's going to be mainly from your wages, but also it could include company benefits like RSUs, restricted stock options, or non-qualified option grants, or if you're a small business owner, the Schedule C income that comes through. That's going to be taxed at higher rates, the ordinary tax rates and the tax brackets, which I'll get into toward the end of the podcast here. The other type of income is capital gains. And important distinction within there, capital gains meaning, securities you hold, investment properties or your houses, et cetera. Mainly today, let's focus on securities that you hold in your portfolio. The key distinction with capital gains is know that there are short-term capital gains and long-term. Each one will receive different tax treatment. If you held a security for 1 year or less and you sell it and realize a gain or loss, but gain is what's going to be impacting us here, that is going to be considered a short-term capital gain and treated as if it were ordinary income, i.e. those higher rates. But if you have it held for a long term, so longer than 1 year, that's considered long-term capital gains, and you do have more favorable rates on that. So that's an important distinction to be aware of before we jump in here. So now let's go through. On my blog post, or if you have yours handy, grab your tax return, and don't worry, it's just the first two pages. I'll reference some other forms down below, but grab the first two pages, the Form 1040, and let's identify a couple of key lines and what's in there. So the first one I'm going to talk about is line 1A, and that is your W-2 income. So what the value that makes that up is mostly going to be wages that you get from your employer. But be aware that if you contribute to a traditional 401k, that's where you get a deduction, or health savings account or flexible spending accounts. So the number on your W-2 and on this line 1A of your tax return is going to be after any payroll tax deductible savings contributions. If you are contributing to a Roth 401k, that is not tax deductible, therefore it's not going to be reduced by that. So I guess from a planning perspective here, not too much you can control on wages, but one thing to be aware of is, just be aware of these the tax deductible vehicles you may have access to through your employer. So if you are in a high tax bracket, the nice thing about 401ks is there is no income limit on the deductions. So one strategy is to make sure you're making use of those employer-provided deductible savings because there is no income limit there. Next line we're going to grab is line 2A and 2B. It's going to be the interest. They separate tax-exempt interest with taxable interest. Then, of course, any bank savings interest as well. Used to be, didn't matter with bank savings, but this year, 2022 and in 2023 here, bank savings are now earning something, or at least they should be. If not, take a look at your returns closely. But so you now have that. That's where the income goes. I guess from a planning strategy perspective, if you are in a higher tax bracket, just recognize that this tax exempt bucket, basically it's mostly coming from municipal bonds is what you have to hold to be tax exempt. But just because it's tax exempt doesn't mean you should buy them. So take a look at the yield you'd get from munis versus, an equivalent taxable bond, corporate bond, et cetera. And then adjust it for pre-tax equivalent yields and then make your decision from there. I should have clarified, too, at the beginning of this podcast, I'm going to focus only on federal taxes in this podcast here, and I'm just going to be focusing on high-level things to consider, not the specifics of how to do things. So that's the interest. Be aware of tax-exempt versus taxable. Lines 3A and 3B, similar concept, but this time we're going to be talking about dividends. They have what they call qualified dividends and non-qualified dividends. Recall earlier I had mentioned the capital gains, short-term and long-term, and how it got different treatment. Similar concept here. So again, the line, the dividends, it's going to be coming from dividends paid from either direct individual stocks, but also exchange-traded funds and mutual funds that you own, and they kick off these dividends. So the nice thing is the qualified dividend portion does receive the favorable long-term capital gain rate. So that's going to be a lower rate than your ordinary income. So qualified dividends are better if you can control it, and just be aware of which types of asset class securities, the ETFs, which ones kick off qualified dividends versus non-qualified. REITs is one example that is not typically non-qualified for REITs. And then, again, from a strategy perspective, if you're holding a qualified dividend paying ETF and you also have a corporate bond mutual fund or holdings, you're going to get the better tax treatment, the lower capital gains tax treatment. And so you might want to hold the qualified dividend instrument in a taxable account if you have the choice. Jump into line 4A and 4B. This is going to be talking about IRA distributions. But notice they have two buckets. One of them is the amount withdrawn from your IRA, the traditional IRA we're talking here, or 401ks. That's the amount that they typically will, or they do list on the 1099Rs for those who've done these before. So that's the total amount withdrawn. And typically that's the amount for those that are beyond the required minimum distribution age. That's the amount that you have to take out each year. But it would also could include or does include, if you do it, any Roth conversions if you're doing that. So that's the amount withdrawn. Then the next box, that 4B, is the amount that shows, okay, of that amount, what portion is taxable? And not all withdrawals are taxable. All IRA withdrawals are taxable. So two common exceptions are going to be if you have any after-tax basis in your IRA, you can find that on Form 8606. It's a very important form, so make sure if you're doing that, you're aware of it. Or if you're over age 70 and a half, you have this flexibility to use these qualified charitable distributions. That does count for your withdrawal. So that's going to be in that 4A bucket, but it is not in 4B. That's one of the benefits of doing a QCD, qualified charitable distribution. So that's another key distinction of where it would not be included. One quick reminder here, those who do use the QCDs, that does not show up on your Form 1099-R. So it's just going to show you that, hey, you withdrew this full amount. So make sure you keep track of that and tell your accountant if you did any QCDs. And also, too, sometimes if you're not required to take out distributions, most people say, well, I don't want to pay taxes any earlier than I have to. So another strategy to consider here is if you are in a low tax bracket now versus what you expect to might be down the road, you might want to consider some Roth conversions. Just watch out for other impacts on these different lines I'm going to be talking about. Next line, lines 6A and 6B. Kind of double whammies here. So 6A, these are for Social Security benefits. The A part is the amount, the gross amount that you receive in Social Security. And again, that's going to be the gross, so before any Medicare premium deductions, before any tax withholdings. So that's the total amount you received. the amount that's taxable is based upon this funky thing called provisional income. Again, won't get into the details today, but run the numbers through that formula, or have your tax software do it. And if the number's above $34,000, pretty much 85% of that Social Security benefit is going to be thrown into the taxable income bucket, not tax rate, but just the amount that's taxable. And if you're a joint filer, it's $44,000. So then, you know, now moving to that line 6B, the Social Security benefits, that's the portion of your Social Security that is taxable. That number could be one of three percentages of your gross benefits. Either could be 0% if you're below these provisional thresholds. It could be 50% if you're in this tight band around that number, or if you're above it, then it's going to be 85% of your gross wages, gross Social Security, I'm sorry. One thing to be aware of, they set these provisional wage limits back in 1983, or when they were going through the 83 Social Security changes. Those numbers are not indexed for inflation, so bottom line is more and more people are getting caught up in that 85% portion that's included in income, and we're all marching toward that number, so that's just what it is. If you are fortunate enough to be below the 85%, be aware of what they call the Social Security tax torpedo. So if you're doing other things that you control, like realizing capital gains or Roth conversions, that is going to impact the amount of your Social Security that's taxable. So just be aware of that and be very careful. Jumping to the next one, line 7, it's going to be your capital gains or losses. So again, the number here, this is going to be securities that you held and then you sold. So either you had a gain or a loss on the security that you held. It just shows the total number on line 7. Behind the scenes, you're keeping track of, is it a short-term gain or loss, or a long-term gain or loss? And then they all can offset each other. One thing to be aware of, again, if you held it for 1 year or less, that's considered short-term. And if net-net, those are gains and you don't have any losses to offset those gains, you are treated as ordinary income for short-term capital gains. And so try to avoid that get the lower tax treatment if you hold on to it for at least a year. This is a line, you know, definitely a huge opportunity for planning here. Again, you control when you sell something most of the time. If it's puking on you, you got to sell it quickly. But most of the time, as you're balancing your portfolio, just be aware of if it's in a long or short-term status. Believe it or not, there's four different tax rates that are going to apply for long-term capital gains. Some of it's going to be actually at 0%, some at 15, some at 18.8, and some at 23.8. So there's a lot of planning to do here. If you have a lot of losses and you offset all the gains, you can even use up to $3,000 of those losses to offset ordinary income, and then you can carry forward the rest indefinitely. So definitely it's an important line. Be aware of what's going on behind the scenes, and be aware of it as you or somebody else that's managing your portfolio is aware of that. Next line I want to talk about is line 10, which is the adjustments to income. Basically, take a look at part 2 of the Schedule 1. So got to dig a couple of pages into your tax return here, but part 2 of that schedule lists the various vehicles and tax deductions you can take. You may not qualify for all of them, so you have to be aware of income limits and other limits that they have in place for you. But if you do qualify, you can make use of these vehicles, and it helps offset your ordinary income, which is nice. These deductions can range anywhere from like health savings accounts. There is no income limit on that, but you do have to have a high deductible medical plan. Traditional IRA contributions, again, there's income limits. If you're self-employed and you have chosen a retirement plan, which I highly encourage people to do, especially the individual 401ks are very attractive, you can use that to potentially offset income. I'm going to touch upon that later. And even student loans. In the last 3 years, I guess 2 or 3 years, there's been the interest rate moratorium for student loans, but that will be ending no later than August of this year. So for those with student loans, get ready to start paying them again. But again, based upon income limits, the interest on student loans for some people can be tax deductible. Back to line the 1040 form here. So looking at line 11, adjusted gross income. So AGI, you might have heard this referred to as. It's just a calculation. So it captures all of those lines above it. It captures the adjusted gross income so far. Some people may refer to this as above the line number because it's before deductions. But it is an important number. The main reason is because the a lot of different eligibility for, say, deductible IRA contributions or extra Medicare premiums that they charge you for those that receiving Medicare, it's called IRMA. They base it off of, they start with this number and there's modifications around it. So it is an important number that drives those. And so just be aware of, one, you know, which credits and deductions and other things are tied to, typically it's modified adjusted gross income. And the other thing to be aware of is if they say modified, that is different. There's a different meaning of modified depending upon the use. So there's a modified adjusted gross income for Medicare IRMA. There's a different modified adjusted gross income definition for deductible IRAs, et cetera. So be aware of the number. It's an important one. And just recognize that not all modifieds are created the same. If you hate IRMA and want to control it, this is your line to look at along with the modifications and try to take action accordingly. Line 12 is deductions. So it's either going to be a standard deduction or an itemized deduction if it's higher. So there is a the standard deduction is defined by the IRS each year. It does grow up with inflation, so that's nice. And then if you have certain itemized deductions, and that can be found on your Schedule A, you can put in those amounts and add them up. And if your itemized is higher than your standard, then you congratulations, you get to use that. Let's ignore AMT today. So you got to use that number. But one thing to be aware of, the other definition thing is, in addition to the itemized deductions, if you're over age 65, there's some additional deductions. If you're blind or disabled, blind for sure, there's some additional deductions you can add here. But from a planning perspective, prior to 2017, the standard deduction was pretty small. So a lot of people were always itemizing and always making sure that they could do their, you know, mortgage interest and charity and taxes, property taxes, et cetera. Well, after 2017, they raised that standard deduction pretty high. It's for a married, filing jointly in 2023 here, it's $27,700. Whereas before it could have been closer to, you know, $12,000 or so. So a lot of people are now using the standard. You know, some still do itemize, but you may find that you put in your itemized deductions on Schedule A, but it doesn't total that $27,700, so you're just using standard. The couple of things to be aware of here is the value of, say, mortgage interest deductions or charitable contributions. The tax benefit, if you're below that and just using the standard, is it's not worth anything. So it does increase the value of, like, qualified charitable distributions or lumping charitable or making use of donor-advised funds just to have enough in a given year to make it above the standard deduction. So definitely another planning area that you can pick up some value by being aware of that and getting over the standard when you can, but typically you may not always get over that. Line 13 is also something new after 2017. You may or may not, so what the number is, it's a special deduction that people with own the business or a sole proprietor with Schedule C income or S corp income may qualify to reduce more deductions. It was put in place with the 2017 tax changes. It was intended to mimic or replicate the lower tax rate that they passed for corporate taxes, and so that's what it is intended to do. But one thing to be aware of, it's definitely it adds some complexity to the business owners and their tax planning. Especially, you know, what's the difference between a traditional and a Roth, and is it worth that deduction? If you take the deduction, then you forego some of this QBI, it's called, Qualified Business Income Deduction. So probably more tax planning than people realize. There are quite a bit of complexity. So just be aware of it if you're a business owner and ask some questions. And then finally, the bottom of that page one, line 15, is your taxable income. So this is the, again, calculations from numbers above, but it's your income after these various deductions and exclusions. Sometimes it's referred to below the line because it's your income after those deductions. You would think that, okay, well, here's my number. Let's just run it through the tax brackets and I'm done. But that would be an incorrect assumption. There's definitely a lot going on behind that number. Part of it is going through the capital gains tax treatment and qualified dividend treatment. And then part of it going through the the ordinary income tax brackets. And so just be aware, the key item to be aware of from a strategy perspective is what portion is getting that long-term capital gain treatment, and then whatever's left as you run it through the brackets, you know, kind of know what your marginal tax rate is and how close you are, you know, above or below the next bracket, so that you can make decisions accordingly. And you may find, you know, oftentimes too, people see a high taxable income number and it's like, oh, I'm in the high tax bracket, I can't do anything. Well, it may be that a big portion of that is a realized gain that's getting that more favorable 15, maybe the 18.8% tax rate. So again, it's a little bit of a misleading number in my mind. So just be aware of what the breakout is. Flipping now to page two, we're looking at the tax, they call it, but I'm going to call it the preliminary tax based upon that taxable income. So again, calculations behind the scenes that drive it, there's actually quite a few calculations. Like I mentioned, the difference between the ordinary and capital gains. But unlike, you know, line 11, where you did have some strategies to consider, here, nothing to do. It's just, here's the fact. You know, all the work has been done on the lines above that drive this number. Then in the middle of, top of page two there, there's a bunch of different credits. Look at all of them. There are many of them. They all have different income limits and different requirements. But the one I wanted to point out, I circled line 29. For those people that have kids in college or school, I guess education, not sure if it's just college. I don't know that. So education, read the rules, but college for sure. If you have low enough income, there's income limits, but if you have that, there's an extra requirement that you have to incur, you know, tuition expenses with some non-tax qualified money. So just be aware of that. If you do fall below that income limit, it's very important to make sure you spend with some out of, you know, non-tax qualified money for tuition, and you'll pick up a pretty nice tax credit here. So watch out for that. That's a good one. Line 33, total tax payments. Another number that, you know, people may not realize it, but you control this number. So this is going to be the number that how much have you paid into the government before you file your final tax return here. And yes, you do control that. You may not realize it, but when you started your employment, if you're an employer, you fill out a form W-4 that controls wage withholdings. If you have a lot of large capital gains, I highly recommend looking at it. Make sure you make your estimated tax payments due up to four times a year. If you're doing any IRA withdrawals or Social Security benefits or pensions, et cetera, again, you control it. You tell them how much tax to withhold. So you control how much is going to show up in that line 33. I'm going to jump into the next line here, but, you know, take action, making sure you withhold enough, but not too much. And the last line I want to talk about here, finally, is either line 35A or line 37. So either it's a tax refund you're getting or a payment you're making. One thing to be aware of, oftentimes I hear this from people, it's like, oh, I got a much smaller refund this year. Why am I paying more taxes? That is not the answer here. So to know what your actual tax bill is, it's not these numbers. This is really just the end result of all that planning we just talked about. So ideally, you know, you'd want to have a number in line 37. Ideally, it's that you're going to owe a little bit, but low enough to avoid the tax penalties. And so there are some safe harbor amounts you can pay in based upon last year's tax amounts. Won't go into the details here, but certain things you can do. But again, the idea here is it's okay to pay in a little bit, because if you're getting a big refund, think of it as you're lending the government, you know, money at 0% interest for throughout the year. So why not keep it for yourself? Either earn some interest on it yourself or use it. No need to pay in sooner than you have to. So that is the quick summary of some of the key lines on those pages. I was mentioning ordinary income and capital gains treatment and marginal tax rates, et cetera. On my website, I have a table. You know, I show the marginal tax brackets for both ordinary income and then for what wage levels the different capital gains rates kicks in. So I'll let you take a look at that. But again, just be aware that capital gain rate is always going to be long-term capital gain rate is always going to be lower than ordinary income. So if you can realize income through that bucket. And there are four brackets. And so I mentioned earlier, there is a 0% capital gain rate. If your income is right at the 12% threshold, 12% bracket. So generally speaking, let's just say it's right at that point. If you're in the 12% or lower tax bracket, your capital gain rate is 0%, which is very attractive. So sometimes you may want to harvest gains if you're in that situation. And then if you're above those levels, again, it goes up to 15. Above certain AGI numbers, it gets a little confusing with AGI here on the extra Medicare / Obamacare tax. An extra 3.8 kicks in above 200 AGI for individuals, 250 married fine jointly. And then for high income, when you finally hit that top tax bracket, or very close to it anyway, then you jump up an extra 5% on the capital gains. But take a look at it. And just, again, be aware of where you stack up in the marginal tax rate. I also do show just briefly, you may have heard the sunset provision. So if Congress does nothing, keep your jokes aside right now, if Congress does nothing before 2026, the tax rates will revert back to the 2017 levels. And so, that was back when it went, 10%, then 15, then 25, the top rate jumped up to 39.6. So those levels are coming back starting in 2026, unless Congress takes action to change that. So just be aware of that when you're doing your tax planning and what you want to incur. So that is the summary of the tax return. So again, key points here in summary, be aware of the two main types of income, ordinary versus capital gains. And again, capital gains, realize the long versus short difference. You don't need to be a tax expert to pick up some value here. So just go through these things again a bit slower, but have a base understanding and you can pick up some good value. A lot more things you control than maybe you realize. After you go through those processes, make sure you know where your marginal tax rate is and how close you are, to the next bracket above or below. And maybe you can do some things to either get down to a lower one or make sure you don't go into a higher one inadvertently. You may be happy with a large tax refund, but I would not be myself. Ideally, you want to pay in a little bit. No need to give the government your money, any earlier than you have to. So that's the quick summary on the taxes. So enjoy the summer weather. We've got an upcoming long weekend, so enjoy that. Let's not forget what the weekend is for, why we celebrate it. But enjoy that as well. And that's a wrap on today's topic. Thanks a lot. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Financial Translator. I hope this discussion helped clear up any confusion and will lead to more confident financial decisions. Thanks for your time, and be sure to check out all of our resources at pvwealthmgt.com. Until next time, go confidently.